May 12, 2016.
So anyway.
Let's call this meeting to order. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So this is our special board meeting Thursday, May 12th at 6 p.m. to look at the budget. And so, guests, welcome. Thank you for coming. And you're going to get to see, I guess, a PowerPoint presentation of the budget and everything that goes along with that. So, oh, yes, quorum. It's not on here. You didn't put it on my agenda. Present, we have Chairman Tim McCain, Clerk Bill Bailey, Betty Harding, Roger Taylor. I got your name right this time. Yeah. And Steve Ross. So all our presidents have a quorum. And again, guests, welcome. Thank you for being here. Kind of going down the agenda, Fire Chief's report, we do not have one. Staff reports, there are none. Correspondence, there is none. Consent agenda, there is none. Calls to the public, I do not have any yellow cards. So we will continue on. Old business, there is none. And new business, presentation of the 2016-2017 proposed budget by Chief Heaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for the board members in front of you, you have a blue packet. We're, if you open that blue packet behind the cover page, you'll see that there's actually six sections to that. Section one is the PowerPoint presentation. That's where I'm going to go over first. Then we'll talk about our net assessed values and bring everybody up to speed on those. Look at our 2015-16 budget through May 4th when we ran the charts, and our P&L through 5-4, and then finally the proposed 2016-17 budget, and then our 2016-2017 proposed tax rate hike that we're looking at as well. So for the audience, it's going to be interactive tonight, so I need to kind of spin your chairs around if you'd like to look at the PowerPoint. It's behind you, but the way the room's set up, it's just that we have to kind of turn our chairs here a little bit, and it'll all stick together. And then Derek, if you could grab that big light for me, please. So again, this is looking at our proposed budget. Again, for us, we have to have our proposed budget out to the public with a 30-day window notification. So we're meeting as a board next Wednesday, so this gives you basically a week to look through proposed budgets. Go through that, and then we can ratify our proposed budget at our next meeting. It will go to the public for 30 days, and then after that 30 days, we can approve it at our June meeting, and then from there, it goes on to the county for final approval or adjustments from them. Okay. So as we move forward, again, for tonight, we're going to look at our fiscal budget for 2015-16. Again, it was $1,297,798. And as of the 4th, we are at 79% of that budget remaining as of that date. And we had at that time three large payments left, again, our truck payment, our building payment, and our paramedic class. Since that time to today, we've made two more of those additional payments. And instead of being at 79%, we made the building payment and the paramedic payment, so it left us at 86%. If you remember, we budgeted 8% throughout the year, so 8 times 11 months is 88%. So we're still below our budgeted proposal being at 86%. We do have three payrolls left that are running us about $30,000 a payroll, and then we have one remaining billing payment for $60,000 from that as well, so about $150,000. Our reserves capital are strong at $523,000. And the operating carryover is currently calculated, again, at the same as last year, is $168,626. And for our new board members, we don't see a lot of money until September. So this is kind of our money to float us through July, August, and September. Third or fourth week into September, we're typically seeing the first monies from the county. And our contingency is currently set at $100,000 as well. So in addition to that $168,626, we also carry forward another $100,000. So again, some of the highlights looking through for 2016, we did our first strategic planning process was completed with our board and staff. We doubled our daily manpower from 2 to 4 members that included not only shift supervisors working 24/7, 365 days a year, but also at least one paramedic for our department, our district, on as well enhancing the Southwest people. We created key performance indicators. We have daily shift turnover meetings every day, 7 days a week. We were able to fill in missing compliance training. We implemented a new computerized training system for us in-house here. We implemented a new computerized payroll system. And we implemented a new computerized scheduling system for us. Those are three big programs we implemented all in 2015-16. Captain Epic was able to purchase a new LifePatch 15, which is the latest and greatest model. This is a heart monitor that we utilize in the field, and that's been placed in service. Captain Lopez was able to look at some of the equipment deficiencies, corrected those problems, and put everything back in order as well. And we developed a public education program that was lacking greatly here for us with our interactions with the public as well. And we developed a community service program that Captain Lopez was very valuable and integral in as well. So from that, our 2016-2017 challenges, again, we're still looking at strategic planning with Prop 117 in mind. Again, those changes for Arizona that we'll go through as the presentation rolls forward as well. Prop 117 still puts that budget cap at 5%. So year after year, we can only grow by 5% off of the secondary or limited cash value. We also had the anomaly this year that doing work with the county assessor's office, we brought in not only RiverSource, but about 42 homes that weren't in our district for a total of $802,000 of new assessed value from that. So that net assessed value was added into our financials for us to help us in that limited cash value anomaly of Prop 117. We had new manpower models, and we're still working on that to get full-time people. We're still recruiting new members. We've added 15 people since my arrival. We have new equipment needs that the LifePack 15 that Captain Effington brought in is one, and then some of the new equipment Captain Lopez has brought in as well are some of the other ones, just to mention a few. Maintaining existing equipment became something we hadn't been doing a good job on from our preventative maintenance. Remember the tires we had from NFPA 1901 Appendix A through D was telling us we had a lot of equipment needs that we needed to focus on. That we had some increased costs and difficulty with required trainings. Again, what were our required trainings, who needed to be there, and how much did we have, and were we truly in compliance from those elements? So that was some of just the highlights of the challenges from 16-17. Again, currently, as of today, Arizona has 156 special fire districts. Again, our cap is set at $3.25 for our assessed net value. Of the 156 fire districts, 46 are currently at the cap or above the cap with a special bond. So we're really, really tight on those as we're speaking now. And many more are within a few cents in that cap. So Prop 117 has been a challenging situation, not only for our districts, but all the districts and special fire districts in the state of Arizona. We're looking at our financial analysis and opportunities. When we looked at it this year, we looked for our process overview. We did a 5-5-5 risk management model. So we looked at likelihood, time, severity, and we focused on anything we had a score up here in the red. How we did that is we looked at a secondary five-way budget analysis. We emptied all the buckets and started a zero-based balance budget, and we filled them up with what we had. We looked back 5 years, the best we could with a line item based budget. We looked at a year-over-year based budget. We looked at the actual cost by cost centers for each of those models. But we finally did a failure modes and effect analysis and developed cost center bucket analysis to go back to the functional holders and say, all right, if we didn't have this, how would it affect us to try to build those failure modes in and financially try to limit that risk as much as we can, could, again, to drive out of this red box you see up here in the upper right hand. So with that, we were able to get the list of data. We ran that cost center analysis and created our draft 2016-2017 proposed budget. We then went back to our financial bucket holders and looked at Pepper from the administrative assistant or business manager standpoint. We took the data Captain Lopez provided, Captain Lopez provided for facilities and equipment. Captain Ethington provided for EMS in the charts that he did every month as well. Then finally the training dollars that we had from Captain Hemmings. Once we rolled those into the budget, we did an analysis and said, okay, what did that look like? Well, from Pepper's standpoint, it was accounts payable, payroll, taxes, office supplies, all the way down there, and you'll see how those are covered in our P&L as we talk about that moving forward. Second, from Captain Uffy's standpoint, or again, just what's our cost of regular EMS supplies? What were our drug costs per year? Our annual inspections? The image train, which is our software program, all the way through there, through the additional textbooks for the PCR, we added a new computer to the system, total of about $35,000. Captain Lopez did the same thing, again, working on equipment for the budgets that we had to roll forward from last year. So work on the air conditioner on engine 566, landscaping, repainting, some new decks for the dorms and beds as well, and front parking lot servicing for a total of $21,300. And Captain Hemmings looked at training mainly for our driver, company officer, and extrication training, bringing outside help for a total of $7,800. So from that, we created what we call our financial deep dive in the list of data above. We ran a cost risk analysis and created our draft 2016 final proposed budget for final submittal to the board for consideration for the 2016-17 budget fiscal year. So with that, you'll see these charts here. We ran it three ways. We were asked by the board to run it at 0%, run it at 2.5%, and run it at 5%. So if you see here, if we have a tax rate of 0%, our tax rate is going to stay the same at $2.8790 for that proposed budget. Now you will see an increase in here on the charts as well, because remember, our district net assessed value went up $802,000. So that put roughly about $32,000 into the coffer. So to be exact, it was $31,422. From that, again, our new proposed budget will go from 1.297 to 1.329220. That's if we remain it at zero. If we look at the next budget, which is to do a 2.5% increase, we will have a new tax rate of 2.9752. It would be an increase of approximately $64,653 for a new budget of $1.362451 million. And finally, if we raise it 5%, we'd have a new tax rate of 3.0715. It would give us an increase in our budget of $97,883. And it would give us a new financial budget of $1.395681 million. So it's kind of a breakdown of the three ways to go forward for next year. Now, some of the 2016-2017 budget need justifications. We have increased costs for maintaining existing equipment. Our vendors want more money to come out and help us keep that stuff in service. We have supplies are going up. We're seeing increased costs on that. We have a tremendous amount of costs on our non-fixed costs. Our healthcare cost is going up tremendously. Our workers' compensation is anywhere between a 200 and a 500% increase. And we bring on additional people for us as well, so that's a big one. Inflation again across the state and nation. Our fuel costs are up, which I think all you can buy at that point. Our vehicle liability insurance are up, and our benefits costs continue to go up as well. If we're at average across the board, we're seeing about a 325% increase in those non-fixed costs. New equipment needs, again, we talked about the LifePak 15, the new equipment Captain Lopez needs as well to keep our equipment in service, continues to go up in cost as well. Our increased cost for facility needs as we do our own repairs in-house, our supplies continue to go up as well. Our enhanced training requirements needs, again, Captain Lopez has done a great job getting everything we have up to speed for our training so we can hold as much training in-house here so we save that travel cost and hotel cost to send people out as well. And that's part of our strategic budget to turn this training room into an IFSAC FESHI training room, where we'll not only be able to train our people for a reduced cost, but we'll be able to sell seats out of that program as well to be a revenue source into the district moving forward. Again, we're establishing those in-house training programs. Recruiting opportunities, again, how do we work smarter, not harder? What's our opportunities to sell our services on either an auto aid or a mutual aid basis to our neighbors around? And look at financial windfalls from there. And again, 2015-16 budget was maintained at a 0% increase. So when I came in March, we looked at where we were about 76%. I didn't know exactly how fast I could execute on my strategic plan. So we left that at zero. So for the last year, we've seen a 0% increase. So again, my recommendation to the board is we propose a tax rate increase of 5%. If we interpolate that back, it's 2.5% for last year, 2.5% for this year. So we're well below our cost of index raises for the state, and we're far below the 325% increase that we're seeing on non-fixed costs. If we do that, we'll have a new tax rate of $3.07. That'd be an increase for the district of about 19 cents per $10,000 of assessed value. And we have a new budget of $1,395,681. So the current cap again is set at 325. So we have plenty of room before we get to that cap. And we have plenty of growth built in there as well too, especially if our district starts to expand. So that's important for there to look at that process as we move forward. Now, we figure our budget basically on a $100,000 house in Arizona City. So what's the real cost to our customers? At $2.87 per $10,000 of assessed value, if you have a $100,000 house, it's going to cost you about $287 a year to have paramedic firefighter coverage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. At our new rate, it's going to cost that same household owner $307. Okay. So about $22 per year is going to be the increase from last year to this year. You interpolate that back, it's $11 last year, $11 this year. But that'll be the increase that we're looking for to move forward. So what we're saying is about the price to go out to a fast food restaurant and get a bigger drink is what we're asking for from this year to last year, to have our own paramedics on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year with their shift leaders and available as well. So again, it'll just move from $2.87 to $3.07. So again, the challenges we're seeing, again, even if the proposed budget is approved by the board, you know, we will increase our 2016-2017 dollars by only $97,000, or less than $98,000. To put one EMT on the street every day, 7 days a week, costs about $109,000. We've added two on, plus a shift lead, and we were able to incur those costs in the budget. So this won't even pay for that one additional person to move forward. So we still have to find financial opportunities to stay successful and bring more windfall back into the department for revenue cost. Given that we have a vision to maintain our customer focus and drive to achieve our key performance indicators, again, we have to come up with new financial efficiencies to build into the current budget to be successful. So how do we get there? What's the roadmap or the path to move forward? From that, really, we have great, strong financials. 2016-17 rolling forward are very good. We have a carryover of $168,626. We have another contingency built into the current budget of $100,000. We have a capital outlays budget of $523,101. Again, we're going to pull a little bit out of that this year to be able to cover our costs, but it's still very strong. And we're going to build operational efficiencies through financial operational excellence. Again, how do we work smarter, not harder? And how do we bring more dollars into the district? Scheduling efficiencies, what's the best way we schedule? When I first came here, we had 29 people that we tried to carry as whole people and try to schedule the best way they can. 86% of our members were full-time firefighter, EMTs, paramedics somewhere else, and that was a great strength for our organization. One of our biggest opportunities for improvement was that same 86% could never work here full-time, and this was always their secondary responsibility. So as challenges and opportunities came up at their host districts, made them unavailable for here. We have some people work schedules where they're just not available here 15 days a month. We have other schedules where they're not available 20 days a month. We won't have our operational excellence if we only see somebody 10 days a month. So we've got to modify how we utilize these people, but get a core basis again why we drove to get 9 people that work every third day for us. training. Again, bringing those opportunities in-house, making this an IFSAC and a FESU training center, partnering with our outside partners to bring them in and bring revenues in as well will help us bring more dollars into the district. Again, how do we increase our footprint? We're adding property to the south. We're adding property to the east. We're trying to bring Mountain View Estates into the north. These are more opportunities to bring more financial dollars into our district. And what I found, especially with Pinal County with Assessor Wolf, is they're overworked and understaffed. And you can put a question mark behind either one of those. But the problem is we don't have all the houses in our district that were supposed to be in there. So I was able to work with that group and make sure we had it. That's why we had that windfall of $802,000. Granted, a large part of it was River Source, but we still had 40 other properties that we weren't getting the financial dollars for. And that helps us again through this operational excellence. We've added a county maintenance building just east of Overfield and south of Battaglia, which allows us now to make a bigger footprint and start moving back to the east as well. And that brings in more financial opportunities for us as a district. So the opportunities we see, again, you know, complete the patient care package. Again, how does that look? What's the best thing to do? Is that completion of that patient care package really fulfilling our CON right now, or is that like buying a Blockbuster video? What's the billing associated with that, and how do we work? Or do we partner with Southwest or the CON holder parent to try to come up with better billing opportunities for us to get some of that money back when we support that process? Again, we have the addition of two paramedics per day. When you add those two additional people in, plus the CDP with myself, it gives us a manpower model of at least five per day. Financial opportunities to offer trainings. Again, we're going to bill out every seat when we train a class here. Anywhere from $200 to $2,000, depending on what the class is, we can put those monies back in as revenues into the district to help us take our next steps to be successful, be that either the CON or a Wildland program that we can bill back out through the federal government. And looking at auto aid, mutual aid, work with Eloy Fire District and Casa Grande Fire Department, what are their needs strategically? What can't they achieve? And can we help them achieve that for our financial cost for them and a revenue stream for us? So how do they grow within their strategic model, and how do we support that through either auto aid or mutual aid, and what are the financial dollars behind that as well? Reduce redundancies by establishing those auto aid mutual aid agreements. Again, instead of buying redundant equipment and having redundant processes, how do we save money to work with them in more of a partnership versus an offer? And we still have an active recruiting campaign. We're still looking for more medics with fire experience to help us go to the next level. We're looking for specific skill sets for shift leads, for people to be able to train in-house, and also looking for opportunities via Wildland, equipment management, or equipment offering through that auto aid or mutual aid process. And again, how do we continue to increase our district's footprint? Mountain View is isolated from us from the Eloy Fire District, but we've gotten a relief in a standard to say we can either go through state process or federal land or Indian control land to get there. So maybe there's kind of a long way I can go to get around it, but if we get it, there's about 300 homes out there. And those 300 homes will be at the same bill rate as what we're paying right now or what we're proposing to go forward. So it's something we can do. It's only 2.5 miles from our station to the entrance into the subdivision, and it gives us a tremendous increase in our district footprint to kind of work through that and move forward. Yes?
Do you have fire hydrants available in that subdivision? Do we have
not
to take
100%.
A pumper? We have to take a pumper truck.
Yeah, so we carry water in every truck we have. Okay. So any truck that we go out there, we have water in it. There are hydrants back by Sunland Gin Road that we could lay in if it wasn't too far, or do a tender operation. We have a tender here, and we could set up tender operations as well.
Okay. How far south was you going to go?
Well, right now, our proposal is to go 1 square mile south, all the way around our southern border to add those 4 square miles in, and then come up east and then start to go, I'm sorry, come up north and then start to go east to go all the way down to border up on our districts of our neighbor to the north and east Eloy Fire District.
Okay.
Finally, evaluate response radiuses. Again, how does that work? How fast are we getting out of the station? What's our response times? Do we have the right group? Perfect example is last night we ran 4 calls in a row, finishing another call, and in the middle of that call was a gunshot wound victim. We ended up flying that paramedic out. I'm sorry, we flew him out with the paramedic, the gunshot wound victim out as well. So, you know, it's a big response to get everybody out. We have a tendency to have back-to-back calls. Again, it's in like 82% and back-to-back. The back, I think, is in the, like the 20% now. So again, how does that response radius work for us to be successful? So again, the 2016-17 proposed budget, just as a conclusion, given that we aspire to fulfill all of our key performance indicators, with a tax increase of 5% and utilizing those efficiencies we just described that can be achieved internally with the current year's approved 2015/2016 budget, going forward, we will be financially successful in achieving this vision with that 5% increase. So to support that process, you'll see behind tab 2 is our net assessed values. The first sheet you see there is our net assessed value. Again, these are limited property values because of Prop 117 is our secondary rates. We used to be at the primary rates, now we're reduced to secondary rates. Our net assessed value, or NAV, for 2015 was $27,968,147. Through that addition of that $802,000, if you'll flip to the next sheet, please, you'll see that our net assessed value went up to 68,700. So you'll see that's at $802,000 increase. It gave us about a $32,000 increase in our financials. And then tab 3 runs you through the percentages of where we're at with the 15-16 budget. From, you'll see it in the top left-hand corner, July 1st, it starts our fiscal year, through when we ran the data on the 4th of May. So if you look at the total spend on that one on the bottom of the total operational expenses on the bottom of the second page, you'll see as of the 4th, we're at 79%. And like I said, as of the 11th, we're at 86% with those two major expenditures that we included after the 4th. And on tab 4 starts our P&L. That's an example for some of our newer members on the board. If you're curious what our profit and loss looks like, again, this is July 1st through May 4th. Has all the numbers through there from both the revenue side and also the expense side, broken by categories of spending. And then behind tab 5, this is our proposed 2016-17 budget at 5%. Again, you'll see the revenues at the top. And the expenditures starting at the bottom of page 2 and going forward. Two anomalies to our revenues. If you look at line item 10105 that says general fund carryover, again, we put $168,626 into that fund. We spent $143,712.55. So again, that's our money for our budget for July, August, and September. So of that, we spent $143,000 of that. So that's one anomaly. The second anomaly that you'll see is on the fire hydrant funds, right above total miscellaneous revenues. That bond is a $110,000 bond that the water district does for us every single year. That money comes in, the money goes out, we don't spend it. That's what they get for maintaining our hydrants.
Who gets that again?
The water district, to maintain our hydrants.
So it's kind of just in and out for
it's
us.
In and out. We don't do anything with it. We don't get any values.
It's a zero.
At the end of the day, it's a zero.
So. With the tower revenue, I noticed that, you know, our year-to-date $67,000. Is that it? Are we going to see $67,000 next year with only budgeted $45,000, or is it going to drop?
It's going to go up. So as I renegotiate contracts that weren't in our best financial interest, that's how we went from, actually it was $42,000 that we were set to go to $67,108. And we're going to get another payment from Verizon before the end of the budget year, so that's another $1,500 roughly. So I'll keep working on making sure those are financially good for us. If you remember, we had AT&T, we were ready to shut the power off because they wouldn't negotiate, and they started to negotiate with us and got us our payment right away on that at our increased rates. So I see that increasing as well. One of the challenges for that, we still get approached for selling our tower rights out at 100%. I just don't want to do that. It's about $2 million. I think it's just too big of a risk for our bank right now that if the county got in a bind.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We want that.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, we're just playing with their money. But I think for us, this is the best way for us to finance. Those are the only three anomalies to the revenues, and then you'll see expenditures down below. Again, you'll see a tremendous increase in planning budget for payroll expenses again because of on 20003 because of expenses with our additional workers in. And then also my salary went up this year and the pensions are in there. And then you'll see in the insurance, you know, we only budgeted last year $9,600 because we didn't provide any insurance to our employees at all, none.
Yeah.
So by adding that in, it's unfortunately very expensive for us within the Affordable Health Care Act. So we had to budget an additional $72,000 just to cover that. So again, the big thing for us is it's really just adding that, you know, $96,000. But from that, we're behind the curveball even for adding one person, and we've added two, plus a shift lead. So that's helped us to be beneficial from there to expedite our financial advantages to see truly the dollars we're spending and how that works to move forward.
We talked before about getting you some help so you're not running ragged. Is that going to be budget?
We're just going to have to see.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's really a couple things we can do. Can we look at getting our wages more fair and equitable and adding an additional position in there? I'm just looking at the financial model to see how we do that. One thing we can do is by adding full-time people, instead of somebody being gone for 20 days a month or 15 days a month, if I can have somebody that works a 24-hour shift and off for 48, similar to Captain Lopez, then some more of the administration can then go down to those people. But we've got to fill two additional spots as well to make that happen. So we have to see who's available to help us do that. Unfortunately, with the PSPRS contributions and the wages at the other departments, I don't see anybody leaving those departments to want to come to work for us right now. Our processes are just lack the maturation that they have at the other. But we'll do the best we can and try to fill those with people to help us from that standpoint, to really kill two birds with one stone. Again, that $97,883, again, you extrapolate that over the last 2 years, it's $11 is what our customers are going to see in an increase for us from that process. And then the last tab six is just a breakdown of how this budget looks as we go forward. So if you look at 5% off of 2016-2017 budget, again, we'll have a new tax rate increase of 5%. Our rate will move from $2.87 to 3.0715, so an increase of about 19 cents. It'll give us that new budget of 1.395681. And we'll have a total revenue source of that moving from the budget of the 1395681. Again, the carryover for $168,626. We have personal property for $10,000, our FDAT, which are our fire department assistant taxes that comes from the federal government. It's roughly 20%. It's not the right way to figure it, but it's how the district's always done it. But it's close. It should be closer to 22%, but it's $176,726. The fire hydrant bond, which again is a push-pull, $110,000 comes in, $110,000 goes out. Our tower rental is going to be a little bit greater of $45,000, but I only wanted to budget off the $45,000. The interest from our accounts, from our capital reserve accounts, is roughly $1,700. So our real estate taxes will be $883,629. And down below, that 20% just references how the district has always figured FDAT. The important thing to remember at FDAT, it's a pool. And we all get in that pool together. When there's 156 of us, it's roughly about 20%. If there's 154 that looks like the districts are going to, maybe that's more like 21-22%. Cohesively, the other direction is if 160-170 people get in there, that FDAT money doesn't change. You just move more people in the pool. So it's probably going to go down a percent or two as well. So although we figured it at 20%, it's never 20%. It's just the way it works out for us. So I just want to exercise caution if you discuss the budget with people. It's only 20% because our numbers kind of work out that way. But it's shared resources between all the special fire districts in the state of Arizona.
Are you at all concerned about how close we're going to be getting to that? I mean, we've still got some room there to the 3.25, but not a lot of room, you know.
No, you know, I'm really not. I think with everything else we have coming in, you know, I think we're going to move sequentially depending on how much of the strategic plan gets executed. You know, we're about 36 months into my strategic plan, and I've only been here 14 months. So I think we're ahead of the curve that we laid out when we did our strategic planning early last year. Some of it has really been with the maturation of the board. It really has been. Some has been we're just in the economy in the recession of 2008 and the triple whammy of Prop 117. It went to that 325 cap. We're eliminated by 5%. And the third part of that is we went from primary assessed value to secondary assessed value. For our district, again, we had an anomaly because we had a lot of people that weren't paying taxes. When you go to that secondary rate, you get that tax rate in. So we went up last year. And due to the due diligence we did to make sure everything was in our district that we had, plus River Source coming in, because it's about a 30-month lag with the county. If you bring a house in today, like we've just annexed some property just south of Nugget by the annex, we won't see those dollars for 3 years. But those services start the day we sign the letter. So it's just how the county lags. And at best, it's 30 months. Typically, it's 36 months. So you want to be careful if you bring in.
Behind the eight ball.
The rear.
On
that.
I want to own a company like that. That's great.
So you got to be careful. If you bring in a big box store, that you're not going to see dollars. Yeah. You're going to have to do a special bond to bring in a big box store because you're not going to be able to provide that service for them. So you just have to be cognizant of how that builds into the strategic plan. Don't think that's going to happen. But if we're to bring in, let's say, some special subdivisions that's rumoring through town,
yes,
it's going to be a lot of work for us as well. So we've got to be cognizant that we're 30 months behind the curve, so we've got to build that into our strategic plan to be successful financially and to have sustainability as well. Once we catch it, it's great. River Source is a perfect example. It was 3 years ago we annexed it in. We're just seeing dollars in 2016-17.
You annexed it 3 years ago?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's been a three-year life. And it's a lot of calls. We'll just say on average. How many call me times do you go to River Source a month?
15.
15 times.
Wow.
It's a lot of service.
Growing.
Yeah. You look at our crew going on the streets, about $1,100 to turn a call, start to finish with everything involved. That's a lot of process to get in there.
And it's mainly EMT, but we run a truck with the EMT.
Yes, right. So we run them. Right now, we're paramedics 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And because we have so many calls that are back-to-back, like happened two shifts ago, we've got to be able to divide and conquer. Same thing with lift assist. When somebody calls 911 and says, I've fallen and I can't get up, we have to respond as a full alarm, even if it's a lift assist, because we don't know what has happened when that person has fallen or what was the causation behind why they fell. So it's important for us to be able to respond, and more importantly, respond to the second call once we're there. So we divide and conquer a lot in this district.
So this river thing is what, the very end of town?
Yes.
Oh, it's out.
On the other side, where they didn't have any fire district at all.
That's when they first annexed, it wasn't, no. Just like everybody south of, is it Nugget Road?
Milligan
Road. And then going back around, we got a little bit around Milligan, and then south of Nugget, that was all unincorporated as well. And then now going south of Milligan, east of Sullingen Road, we now have three properties there. So our goal is to try to continue to build that in and get those homes in.
Is that the word? So they didn't pay for
Silverbelt.
Oh, straight down to Silverbelt?
Oh, no.
Back
no,
this way.
Yeah.
It's about an mile out of town. They're
right.
That big.
Yeah, and they're on the right.
Yeah, this is Silver Road. Yeah.
Just on the west side of the road.
And they got, do they have fire hydrant in there?
Yes. Now remember, our district is the southbound hard border is Milligan. East border is Overfield. North we have Battaglia. And on the west side we have Hennis. So we have some outside of that. We're trying to grow that to grow right. Those 6 square miles down, 3 to the south, 2.5 because we have Cabrillo Estates to the east. And then push that farther east and then get all that square miles in Mountain View Estates as well.
3 years for any of those, if we get them.
That's correct.
And Eloy's blocking us from
that's correct.
Path, right?
Yeah. But there's some state land and federal land and Indian land that we can utilize to be contiguous. Right now, the state says you have to be contiguous without just the road. So as long as two corners touch, even on diagonals, I'm okay, but I can't use Sunland Gym to get there. So we're looking to barter land, maybe with some new administration coming to Eloy to see maybe if we get a strip of land to get there. Even if that doesn't happen, I think I can get around with federal lands to get there. Eloy's not interested in it. Casa Grande's not interested in it. We'll just have to see how it works. It is non-hydrated, but 97% of our calls are EMS related, and every truck we have has water on it.
So Eloy doesn't really want that. They don't want you to have it. That's what it sounds like.
Well, that could be one interpretation.
Oh, man. And Casa Grande don't want it, but they don't want you to have it. They want
that
you
could
to
be
drive all the way around Casa Grande Mountain to get to it.
I would say they're probably more on the premise of a majority of our cities are hydrated, and we don't want to make an exception. Right. So until you bring hydrants in, we're not going to service your district. We already have areas that aren't hydrated, so it's
right.
A change in business process for us. And it adds 300 new homes for us. At one time, we were offered everything, basically halfway to the I-10 South was offered to us, and the district turned it down. Great for us financially.
Mm-hmm.
With a low risk model, to be honest with you. You look at likelihood time severity, that's really, really low for what we had back then. But today, we're hard bound at Battaglia. So we'll just have to see how do we grow strategically and grow smart.
Okay.
So, you know, what's specific, what's measurable, what's accountable, how do we make it relative? And how to make it time bound to really get through that first 30 months. Yes?
Captain Lopez, I think, had a comment.
That's probably what Chief's talking about. Casbin only owns three houses, let's say. And it takes them 20 to 30 minutes to go from Station 2 or 60 minutes from Station 4 away to that area. And Casbin has two homes. Have you ever seen that? Christmas, the lights out there.
Yeah.
Cashman owns that house, and next one, that's it.
Huh.
Cool. And so if we get that, it gives more energy for us over here. So.
Sure.
And there's a hydrant right there by Love's.
Right.
And that's what we use most of the time. We used to get fires out there, so brush fires.
Yep. Captain Lopez brings up an excellent point. For Casa Grande, with four engine companies to draw one all the way out there for the isolation ring going around, maybe we do an auto aid policy for every response, we get $1,200. Saves them money and provides a revenue stream for us, and we respond to cover that. So there's a lot of ways you can kind of skin that cat, see how it lays out with conversations with our neighbors.
Anything else on the
question?
Yeah. Yes.
Is there anything in here for the crew for raise and pay, or are we just holding true for a year?
No, there's everything that we've added has specifically gone to three buckets: salary, benefits, and pension.
Okay.
That's the only place it's been in. So.
Okay.
Anything else?
We actually have cut from the other buckets to get additional money to see what we can do.
All right, well, let's move on to number two then.
All right, so number two is for board member Bailey, board member Harding, and board member Taylor. This is the election information that we've had for our three seats that are coming up in November. So you'll see, share with yours.
No, you won't have it.
Because your position is up, Steve, so you're good. So yourself and Tim
I'm
are
stuck.
Not in this election.
I'm stuck. Yeah.
You're with us for 4 years.
We're stuck, man.
That's like my shirt.
Me and you.
Like my shirt. I'm wearing it.
You're going to have it for a while.
I'm wearing it every meeting.
So the important thing is our IGA was received, which are interagency government agreement where the county agrees to be our proctor for our election cycle. You'll see there on the, again, we're under the general election, so it's the beige or tan column there to the right. The candidate filing period is 120 to 90 days before the election. That's the important box, the second one down. After you do your due diligence and get your signatures, depending on which party you are, again, for a Democrat in the district, you need 279 signatures. For a Republican, you need 306 signatures. And hopefully you're not an independent, but if you are, you need 2,034 signatures.
Man.
So
really?
You may want to look at your party affiliation.
You may want to change your party affiliation before you do that, right?
How many?
2,034 as an independent. And these are county requirements, not ours.
That's great.
But again, Democrats, 279. Republicans, 309. Independents, 2,034. Now, when you look at those numbers, what's that tell you about our district? What's the highest percentage we have in Arizona City?
Independents.
Independents.
Independent, yeah.
That's why that number is so much higher. It explains a lot.
There has to be something to vote.
So, again, that's true. The signatures requirement depending on the party affiliation you are. So.
Did we do that last time? Yes, we did.
Here's what I'm going to tell you, too. Remember, before you file your paperwork, if you're thinking about making a party affiliation change, you have to do it before you file your paperwork. Because whatever you're on the county records for, that's what they're going to demand out of your signature. So I know my voter registration card was wrong this year. I was listed as unclassified, which is the same as an independent. So definitely check your voter registration cards and make sure you're listed correctly.
That's why I'm wondering if that number's so high, because it was that mistake could be made where everybody
could be. So again, for the three members running again, after July 11th through August 10th, you can file. If you miss that August 10th deadline, you cannot run for office. Okay.
So you August 10th?
August 10th is, and if you look at your yellow box, it's the second one down. And it's July 11th, once you receive your signatures, all the way through August 10th, close of business in Florence. So again, this is just for Bill, Betty, and Roger, because they're four-year term offices. We're up for those positions. Steve assumed a new four-year, and so did Tim. So they're exempt from the process.
But you're more than welcome to help us get signatures.
You have to go out, and then you got to get that many signatures, 2,000 signatures, you're independent. Better know a whole, well, I know a lot of people, but damn.
What's that?
That's a lot.
She asked you what happens if you don't get the signature count.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have them signatures by when?
No later than August 10th.
No later than August 10th.
Has to be into them by August 10th.
Well.
So, again, you may want to check your voter affiliation before you get excited.
Well, if you have a few up there, I'm sure.
Okay. But, again, we have our IGA in place. If we have to run a general election, it's about a $10,000 process.
Yeah.
Start to finish. If we only have three candidates, we don't have to have an election. We are going to post. We'll have that up to meet our requirement from there as well. So just like the budget, this is just a proposed budget for the board. Depending on how the board votes on next Wednesday, we'll post that in the paper for 30 days, which has to be done before we can vote on it. In our June meeting on the 15th, we can vote on it there and send it to the county for ratification and or adjustments as we move forward.
Else? All right, our next meeting is next Wednesday, May 18th at 6 p.m. And your agenda items need to be in, I don't know, sometime before that.
This Friday.
On the, what is it, the 10th?
Yes.
And other than that.
That was 2 days ago.
We have one. We have one from board member Ross that's on the agenda, and the other two are just kind of carry-throughs. One for the insurance, one for, I can't do my contract to get the insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And then ratification or adjustments and or of the proposed 2016.
And we're not going to discuss the budget until the June meeting.
Yeah, this is just a presentation meeting tonight.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
No. Yeah, next week.
Oh, next week.
I was going to ask.
Well, just that next week, so we've got to be in by June.
I see. Okay.
Okay, I think Mr. Bailey has a motion to make.
I'd like to make a motion we adjourn the meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.